What's up? This is Levi.
And this is Ryan from Miss May I.
And we give you the right to rock.
The right to rock.
Recorded live at Nightmare Studios, I'm your announcer, Joey Clingers, and you're listening to the Genius and Ragman Show, where two mamalukes talk about hard rock, heavy metal, drink craft beer, and interview the people who make the music we love. Horns up! Get ready for two guys who are so metal they rust when they sweat. It's Genghis and Ragman.
What the?
I don't even want to know. That's...
You guys don't ever give me time off, so my doctor couldn't come up here.
Uh-huh.
Dude,
if you want to take the night off, we're cool with it.
Yeah, it would have been fine.
That's the problem, is you never want to take time off when we're here, so we don't get to enjoy you gone.
It's real funny when you're on tape, right? This place is like a fucking slavery, man.
Please.
Right.
Well, can you just... earn your Ed McMahon check for this week and just click the video on, please. Oh, what is this? This looks good.
What are we watching over here?
This looks like...
I'm going to tell you what we're watching over here. It's my turn, don't you know?
Alrighty.
How about a little bit of Accept?
Oh, nice.
Restless and Wild Live. Blind Rage, live in Europe, 20... 15, I think. I can't read.
Nice. Huh?
So, I gotta admit, you know, before we get talking about this video and Accept and all that stuff, I think myself, I don't know about Genghis over there, but I'm more of an Udo homer. Huge fan of Udo.
Oh, okay, that's interesting.
And Udo. You?
Yeah, definitely.
Were you ever a really big Accept fan?
No, I can't say that I was. I remember back in high school when Balls to the Wall came out and everybody was loving that song. And I, you know, it was a good tune, of course. But I never knew about him much more than that. You were always way into European metal.
Oh, yeah.
Long before the only thing I knew about European metal was the obvious ones, Judas Priest and Iron Maiden, that kind of stuff. All the other, I mean, there were hundreds of other bands, and I didn't know anything about them for years.
Well, you know, I bring up a station back in the early 80s here in Houston called KPFT.
Ah.
And they would have metal shows. I believe it was on, like, Friday or Saturday night.
90.9
or, like
or whatever they were?
90.1, I believe.
Ah, okay.
And, oh, thanks, Paisan.
A little bean nuts here.
Bean nuts.
Who doesn't like bean nuts?
Anyway, first time I ever heard Holy Diver from Dio.
Oh, nice. On KPFT.
Actually, I don't even think it was Holy Diver. I think it was Don't Talk to Strangers was the track they were playing.
Sweet.
And I discovered Accept, Restless and Wild was the album before Balls to the Wall.
That's the thing. I mean, if you think about it, what else there was? Well, MTV was around, but they weren't hardcore about, you know, metal, right?
Right.
I mean, Headbangers is about all you were going to get. Mm-hmm. And they only had whatever was distributed. You know, videos were scarce back then, right? So if you take the internet for granted now, but if they wasn't back there, how would you know about shit on the other side of the world?
Right. It was these little pirate radio stations. I'm not really pirate, but I mean, this is an independent
sort of alternative
station.
Or something. Yeah, kind of indie.
And you know KPFT, it's NPR, and then it could be jazz, it could be folk, it could be this or that. And then at certain hours of the night, back in the day, at a decent hour, it was heavy metal.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, speaking of Dio, except YMT for the first time, I heard Midnight in Tokyo.
Nice.
Off the Mean Streak record. They weren't even playing Mean Streak yet, you know. That was the first single, was Midnight.
You brought a like, swing.
Oh, yeah. Of course, I went and spent all my money.
that, so. All your lawnmower money. He's like, I gotta have it.
So that's where I started learning about a lot of bands. My brother was getting into some stuff. Terrestrial Radio was playing, you know, Ozzy, Blizzard of Oz.
The more mainstream stuff. American
like
mainstream stuff.
Yeah. Van Halen.
Ironically, obviously, Ozzy was English, but I mean, I guess we think of Ozzy, the band, as kind of being American.
So. Sure. AC/DC, Back in Black was just out. I remember watching, you know, speaking of MTV, the way I discovered Iron Maiden was this live concert they had on the Killers tour with Paul Di'Anno.
Nice.
That it was, I have actually, Maiden re-released that on one of these History of Iron Maiden discs, you know, years ago.
You're probably loving that for the nostalgia factor.
But I loved Di'Anno, and then, you know, year later, here comes Bruce Dickinson doing,
like, who's this guy?
You know, Run to the Hills.
And you're like, to the hills. This is some fucking metal. Yeah. That's the thing. That's why, and I still have that, you know, those kind of memories of listening to true, just sort of meat and potatoes, killer new wave of British heavy metal sounds like Iron Maiden, and thinking, and to this day, you know, it's still, to me, that's quintessential heavy metal. Classic.
Yeah, for sure.
Heavy metal is Iron Maiden. That's why it's still the greatest band, in my opinion, heavy metal band of all time.
Back in the day, you had Scorpions, you had Sabbath, you had Priest, you had Maiden. I mean, if you want to count Zeppelin in there, but, you know, they always kind of distanced themselves away from the metal, even though they had that vibe, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You had your Thin Lizzy, you know, did I say AC/DC? You had Saxon. You had all these great early, mostly, like you said, European metal bands forging through, and then you start getting your American bands. I mean, you had Ozzy, you know, Euro/American. You had Van Halen, an American band, of course.
Yep.
You had your Foreigner, that was kind of hard rock for back in that time.
Didn't the Crew come along somewhere around in there?
Crew came out in 81, so yeah, right around that era.
I was gonna say.
Too Fast for Love.
Oh, yeah.
So, kind of interesting in the dynamic of, you know, I was talking to the Metal Munchkin the other day, and I was telling her,
who you're really, by the way, just real quick, you're just totally schooling on old school rock, which is nice. She's really getting into this old stuff. You know, you guys are going to go see Robin Trower pretty soon.
Yeah, she loves it. She wouldn't miss it.
She totally dig. She dug. Who else has she been to see?
Because Anthrax and Killswitch.
Right.
We'll
another
talk
old
about
band.
That show a little bit later on, but she liked Anthrax over Killswitch.
There you go. See, older band.
Udo.
Doug Odo.
She saw Enough's Enough and Ace Frehley. Loved the Enough's Enough.
totally.
Didn't hurt that she met Chips enough, so.
Who was totally cool.
Oh, yeah. Saw Saxon and UFO.
Yeah, so he's like all these old bands, which is awesome.
Going to Evergrey in a couple weeks.
That's going to be sweet.
Going to Iron Maiden in June. I mean,
some good concerts coming up.
Going on. The kid's getting edumacated.
Exactly. She's going to be like, she'll be the new rag man for her school. Be like,
yeah.
Kids will be like, so I'm listening to this band. You're like, it's not bad. It's a little derivative, you know. If you want to go back to the source,
exactly.
You might want to check into some UFO or something. Be like, what? Who are they? And what are you talking about?
But yeah, she saw Cheap Trick with us. Uh-huh. Remember?
Killer concert.
So she told me any concert she can get in the venue, she's going. I don't have a choice.
Why not, dude? Totally, yeah. I'm down with that.
But she's loving it. She's loving it. So, but yeah, it was kind of interesting. I was telling her, you know, giving her the whole rundown of some band. And I looked at her. I said, you know what? Your daddy grew up in such a great time. The evolution, really, of heavy metal. You know,
isn't that wild?
Late 70s, early 80s.
It's easier, obviously, to see it now looking back.
Yeah.
But it's like basically metal as we know it today and kind of take for granted didn't exist when we were young. I mean, right. It kind of happened around us as we were growing up, and it's kind of amazing to look back. I mean, yeah, you had the proto-metal type stuff like Sabbath and all that, but that's a different sound than modern metal.
Right.
Even your run-of-the-mill sort of standard heavy metal band basically sounds like heavy metal back then, like an Iron Maiden or a Judas Priest or something, or any of those sort of power metal, those European metal bands where it's got that still that core sound. It's like new bands that sound like that are basically emulating those bands that they grew up with and like, or you know, younger bands that are sort of emulating that older sound because they dig it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that's the metal sound everybody knows and loves, and it's like, and they did not have that when I was in like, you know, fourth, fifth grade,
right?
So it's amazing to see that it evolved as we watched it.
Oh, I agree, man. I totally agree. So it's kind of interesting that the dynamic of the younger generation and you know where we're at. And where these bands are getting at in age and stuff like that. So
that's the thing, dude. Some are getting so old. You're like, dude, they won't be around forever.
They're done, you know, close.
Yeah.
Actually, I heard, you know, Poison's on tour.
Okay.
And they're saying this is probably the last time. It's got to be a personality thing.
Like one last hurrah or something.
Long, you know,
yeah, so it's like, we can get it together for one tour, and then I got to get away from you.
Yeah, so.
Nice influx of cash. I bet you make a sweet chunk of change for doing a tour.
I guarantee you they're doing it for the paycheck.
Sure.
I have to be.
I don't necessarily hold that against it. If you come out and give it, you know, you're not phoning it in, I'm all right with that. I'll give you a couple of bucks.
I mean, would you want to go see Bret Michaels on his own?
No, not on his own.
No, me neither. And he's gone for kind of a country thing, too, that I don't really
like. I'm not into that
kind
of stuff.
I accept it with Brian Keel. Kind of what he's doing's a little different. It's not, he calls it heavy metal country.
Mm-hmm.
But it's more like Southern Fried Rock, really.
Yeah, which is cool. I mean, that's his thing. But my thing is, though, it's like, Slash.
Why am I eating? I'm so full.
Slash, I mean, he's he was great in Guns N' Roses, obviously. Then he did his own thing, and I was like, I can't get into this solo-y stuff. I mean, you have every right, obviously, to express yourself and go, this is what I want to do as Slash, not as Guns N' Roses Slash, but me, Slash. That's fine, express yourself, but that's not really my deal, dude. I want to hear you play Guns N' Roses type shit. Write more of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he's you know, he's enjoying himself playing a lot of funkier stuff, a lot of guest stars and women stars, some of them in the kind of R&B sort of scene and stuff like that. And like I said, go for it. I mean, he played on Michael Jackson's album, right? Black or White did that guitar part, and I'm totally fine with that. But like I said, it's not what I'm into, you know. I'm used to this other sound. It'd be like, you know, any one of our other heroes, like, say, I mean, we kind of like Richie Kotzen doing his, you know, Mother Love Bone thing. That's fine. It's not too far removed from what he does.
Right.
But when these guys really go all the way, like Bret Michaels doing a country album or anything like that, I'm like, okay, it's not that I don't want you to play that, but if I wanted country, I'd go find a country band. You know what I mean?
We know in the last Poison record, they actually disbanded. Horrible.
Oh, okay.
It was unlistenable. It was that bad.
Well, when you change, I mean, same thing happened with Queensryche, right? You change your sound too much, and people just go, whoa. Yeah, what are you doing?
Right.
You know, if you want to break off and do your own thing, cool, but this, the sound we're used to is not. I mean, Killswitch Engage, who we saw and kicked ass.
Oh, okay.
If they all of a sudden, next album said, we're going to do like a ska thing, you know? And it's like, no, you can't. No one's going to buy that album.
You know? Right.
Call it Change Your Name. Put out that album on its own. Put out a ska band, a ska album, and everyone will go nuts. I guess.
Well, that's what Harum Scarum did. And when they said, okay, we're going to do something more pop, power pop, they changed the band's name to Rubber.
Yeah.
With the one record. And I don't think it did great. But
they
do whatever they want to.
So. And that's cool.
Hey, and by the way, guys, Pete Lesbrunt's coming up on an interview here in the near future. So, cool. Talk about the new Harum Scarum.
Is he friend of ours yet enough that we can start giving him nicknames? Like, can we call him Pete Lesbrunt? Can we call him P. Les?
That's not going to work. Pistol. He's good.
Pistol Pete.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm just checking.
Petraeus.
I don't know. We'll just throw some stuff at him. See what he thinks.
We'll go like gothic with it. Petraeus. Hello, Petraeus.
Starts wearing those contacts where your eyes are all white or all black or some shit.
Well, we'll both wear monocles when we talk to him, too.
You love that little fucking guy with the wand. That shit cracks me up.
All
anyway.
Right, let's talk about this. All right, so.
So this guy, so you're sure this isn't Dee Snider's brother?
Yeah, it's Steve Snider.
Or no, I gotta figure out a name for him.
No, he goes by B. Snider.
Lee Snider, that's
Lee
it.
Lee Snider.
It's his brother Lee Snider. So he looks like him. He's got the hair sticking out of the back of his hat, like he's got the big schnoz like Snider.
He kind of has that Brian Johnson look, too, with the
That's true, right? And then I like that the lead singer for Midnight Oil is on guitar.
I don't know why Wolf cut his hair.
Is that who that is? That's Wolf?
That's Wolf Hallman, yeah.
No shit. That does look... I guess, you know, some people, they say, you know, you start to lose your hair, it's like, might as well just go all the way and say, fuck it, start shaving your head. It's a cool look.
Yeah, sure.
I can't pull it off. I mean, I'm glad he did. If I did it, I'd look like a thumb.
There's an elephant in the room. I don't know where he is.
I don't know what we're talking about.
Yeah, he's got the nice mullet. It's kind of a mullet, right?
Yeah, and then he's got the little beard on the front.
Yeah, he got a little long soul patch.
It's party in the back, Holmes.
So, yes, Mark Tourneel, he used to be with a band called T.T. Quick back in the 80s. They did a killer version of, it was a CCR song.
Oh, really?
What's the heaviest CCR song ever?
Bad Moon.
It wasn't Around the Bend. Fuck.
You son of a bitch. And what was her name, T.T. Quick?
T.T. Quick. Actually, I've tried to get it on, like, iTunes or even, like, Amazon MP3.
But you were T.T. Slow? No.
It's unavailable, Holmes. They said, fuck you, right? We don't want you to bloody have it.
Let's see. Here we go. Are they to cover Fortunate Son, Holmes?
That's it.
Fortunate Son.
Look at this guy. I got me little mohawk.
Damn, it's a serious mohawk, dude.
So Tourneel hasn't been in the band since Udo's been out, and God, I don't even know how long. He's done two records with him, right? So he's probably been in the band maybe close to like 8 to 10 years now.
Damn.
You think?
Seems like it.
Gladys, can you do the accept Wikipedia and send it up to us real please? Okay. There it is. Oh, perfect. So, yeah. He took over. I mean, a pretty logical choice. They had David Reese that took over for him back in the late 80s. Mm-hmm. And that didn't go so well. I mean, David Reese just wasn't... I mean, he didn't have the voice. Mm-hmm. He was more of a kind of a more rougher voice.
Yeah.
He was in the band from 88 to 91. And then Dirk Schneider comes back from 92 to 98. And they go in on hiatus, and then Tourneel comes back with them in 2009. So look at me, I was kind of right, 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been with them ever since. And I know when I talked, we interviewed Wolf several years ago.
Yeah.
He was like, dude, come to the show, man. I want to meet y'all. I mean, you're going to love it. I want to hear what you think. You know, we talked accept and stuff
we'll
like that.
We'll rub heads together.
Yeah. Yeah, we rubbed heads.
So now you don't.
It's like a little... never mind.
You're in the club, Holmes.
At least we didn't bump penises.
I know. Wrong heads to bump. No, sir.
Well, that's something you would say.
What's that supposed to mean?
That it is the sort of thing you would say.
I don't follow.
Well, just ponder the thought for a few minutes.
Yeah.
Dude, we've been going a long time, and I'm so fucking parched.
Yeah.
But before, he's doing a pretty good job with the Udo stuff.
He's kind of rocking it out, yeah.
It's shot very well. It looks like a festival like Wacken or something like that, right?
Yep.
It's totally an outdoor festival type thing. It's kind of got an old school feel to it, right? The filming of it.
Yeah, it does.
It's not really that. It almost looks like an 80s style like concert video for like a song. For I say they're promoting a live record. They just said, okay, we're going to put this up here.
Right, and this thing came out, what, in 2015? Like earlier this year?
Yeah, it did, but the show was shot in 2015.
Right, it's an older show. But it definitely looks like it's overseas, right?
Yeah, Europe. It looks like a European festival.
I'm down with that. Yeah, live in Europe, 2015, Blind Rage. I was blinded by me rage, right?
Is it fair to do Udo stuff here, or would it be best to maybe do some Mark Tornillo stuff?
No, I think that whichever you feel is right. I mean, yes, Mark's up on the screen. If you want to give him a sense of what we're listening to, then I suppose, yeah, Tornillo probably makes sense.
I tell you what, well, let's go back to 2010.
All right.
For the Blood of the Nations record. That was actually, I really dug that record. Blind Rage, not as big a fan. I didn't think it hit the mark as well. I just didn't dig it too much. But I tell you what, let's go with Blood of the Nations. Let's go with the title track.
Nice.
I do want to mention something before we go to the beer of the show. If you guys are RxCept fans, they recently re-released a bunch of the early material, man. So it's stuff that you may not have been able to get for a while, but or whatever, it's been remastered. Breaker, I'm a Rebel, the first Accept, Restless and Wild. I mean, all this stuff. It's just been re-released, so I would recommend going and getting it while you can.
Nice.
AFM does a great job with this kind of stuff, and man, I was geeked when I heard
I know,
this stuff.
I bet you were.
I have all the stuff on vinyl, so now I can get on CD. You know, fair enough. I don't know if it was released and maybe went out of print or what the status was before, but seeing all the stuff come through, I'm like, awesome. And I've been kind of on that thing lately where I'm rebuying some classic records, so I was pretty excited to see this stuff was coming out on CD and need to add it to the old collection here. So
it's just amazing they've been around so long.
Oh yeah,
you know, and to still be doing it, you know. I mean, I know that Udo's not in there, but that doesn't seem to hurt them. I mean, this show is just rocking the shit out of stuff. And apparently it was filmed in Balingen at the Bang Your Head Festival or something like
that.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah, the Bang Your Head Festival in Balingen, Germany in 2015. And I don't know, it seemed like you said, it looks like a really good set. Looks like the they're on fire. The fucking photography looks amazing. I mean, is this Blu-ray or is it?
It's just regular DVD.
Regular, it looks great. Yeah. Yeah, it
I want the Blu-ray, nice. But the thing, all I had access to was this. So I was like, you know, I wouldn't mind seeing
No complaints.
That.
Yeah, no complaints. But yeah, this is a good concert. By the way, I don't know if it's worth mentioning, right before we hit the beer, the show we did see, we were at Killswitch Engage with Anthrax, yeah. The Killthrax tour. And that night we were at the House of Blues, that show was being filmed in virtual reality.
Yeah.
Live.
That's awesome.
Which is amazing. I mean, I wonder, we might have to chat about that in a bit, but let's get to that beer, because I'm thirsty.
Oh, dude, I'm parched. Mr. G.
I'm excited about this one.
Me too, bro. We've been holding this one in the cellar for a while.
Yep, and you were down there. You were coming up these stone steps. And you reminded me that this was down there. This is the from Carbach, one of our favorite breweries, local breweries.
Give me a glass over there.
Carbach has this Bourbon Barrel Hellfighter series that they've been doing for a long time. And they do different variations on it. Basically... they call it the BBH.
Oh, wow.
Been a favorite of ours since first release. What they do is they release it several times a year now with different ingredients to mix in there. For instance, this one here that we're having tonight, I'm all a Twitter.
I'm getting the aroma. It smells like a cherry cordial.
Holy shit. Yeah, let me just read it off the bottle and quit fucking around. This is the Bourbon Barrel Hellfighter Imperial Porter Ale. Aged in bourbon barrels, that's the bourbon barrel part, of course. This one's with cherries. And so according to this, and I'm reading it off their site, I think this is release number 6, came out in December of 2016?
Yeah.
Okay, then the way they did this one is, this is 75% aged in Jack Daniel's barrels.
Oh, wow.
22% of it is aged in Woodford Reserve, and 3% aged in Old Forester barrels. So, you know, they kind of get, I think the way breweries do this is... they do get actual barrels from these different distilleries, and they just kind of get whatever comes to them. You know, they don't always have a guaranteed,
yeah.
You know, supply from Jack Daniel's or whoever. So it's kind of whatever they get. And so that's why you have got all these different ones. So they did it in these different barrels and then just sort of blended it all together. And this sucker came out at a 12.5% ABV.
Hello!
Released December of last year, and it's got an IBU of 85, but... that's not necessarily a bad thing when these things come out because, you know, you got to take into context the beer style and all that. So anyway, let's get to this guy. They have the nice label there. They usually have I like the nice font there, the BBH in big letters, and Carbach always does pretty nice bottles. It's got a nice paper label, a little gold or silver foil on it to give a little fancy edge. So let's go right to it. I mean, this sucker's really dark.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not getting a lot of light through that.
No head.
The monkey lamp squinting like, I don't get. And then, yeah, there's like,
no
wow, like no head. I wonder if this thing's going to be really alcohol-y. This will find out. So from the appearance, I'd give it maybe 3.5?
Yeah, about 3.
Okay, let's go there for the aroma.
Oh, wow.
Smells nice. Smells dark and complex, but tasty.
4 on the smell.
That's a 4 on the smell. Yeah, let's hit it.
Cheers, man.
Oh, that's nice. That is nice.
Dude, I just came on myself.
Hey, you know, whatever happens, happens.
Hey, you need a baby wipe?
No, I'm cool.
You sure?
I think he's actually being nice. It's creepy,
yeah,
but it's his version of being nice.
It's what I do and I need to clean up.
Dude, I was just kind of making a joke.
Let's just not go any further with this, please. All right.
You're right. I don't know why I'm eating these beer nuts. For one, the audience hates it, but two, it's...
Tonight.
Yeah, Turtlehead threw some sliders at us, and they were excellent. They had the two different kinds, right?
Yeah.
One was like
a chili cheese burger slider, and then a bacon barbecue slider.
They were amazing. They were really good.
And the chili cheese fries on top of that.
I know. We're just like, holy crap,
you
dude.
Know, oh, boy, you're going to love this shit.
Yeah, he was just like smiling like, I'm going to grab you by the boo-boo. I was like, oh, shit, you're right. Wow.
That is a 4.
Yeah, I'm willing to give it a 4, even on the appearance.
And I was nervous because, if you guys aren't aware, if you're not from Texas, Carbach got sold to Bud Anheuser-Busch.
Mm.
I would say latter part of last year.
Yeah.
And everybody was like, okay, they're going to shit.
Right, that's what everyone, and I'm sure this happens in other parts of the country, so we're probably not the only ones.
Yeah.
But I bet, you know, when you hear one of your favorite breweries is getting sold, you get scared. One of the other ones did that. What was it? It wasn't
Ballast Point.
Ballast Point, yeah.
They were sold to I don't know who.
Like a Belgian company or something like that, I thought I heard. I don't remember.
Maybe so. But their beer's still awesome.
Yeah.
And it's very high price. It's bucks.
They're pretty proud of it, yeah. And of course, BrewDog, they're Scottish brewery, I think, right?
Yeah.
And they, I think they sold part of it. I don't think they like sold to a company. I think they like sort of like one of those, and I'm not good at finance, where basically you sort of like can borrow or something off the value of something to get, mm-hmm. you know, some money like for investing or whatever. I don't know how that works. Anyway, $1 billion. The company's worth $1 billion.
That's
how is
crazy.
A brewery worth $1 billion and it's still an independent kind of crafty brewery? Same with Ballast Point. I mean, their worth was about $1 billion at the time of that.
It was like the biggest transaction
crazy.
In like beer history or something.
Beer. Yeah, that's crazy, man. And so, yeah, you're right. Naturally, it makes sense, too, that, you know, kind of like the way Microsoft or any of these other big companies do, or Google, where you say, hey, we've got this competition. They're kind of kicking our ass. We don't necessarily want to admit it, but this little punk company is getting everybody's, you know, action. Everybody loves them, and they, you know, they hate us because we're the big guy. You know, everyone, king of the hill, you want to knock them off. Fuck that guy, right?
Right.
And so what do? You buy your competition and go, you ain't got my competition no more. You're mine. So that's what they it makes sense of Budweiser. All the big breweries are going to start buying these little craft breweries.
Well, I heard that Anheuser-Busch bought Carbach to get some street cred. In
that's
the craft
part of
beer
it, yeah,
market.
Is you get the credibility
so
of those little indie companies.
If they leave it alone, which they won't, the big companies just can't keep their hands off.
Because a big part of it is, right, is like, well, we gotta cut costs around
sure.
here. I mean, we bought this thing that was pricey, you know, let's ease up. Why do you got to use such premium ingredients? And it's like, that's when it starts going to shit. You're like, the reason it's so good
right.
is because we do those things.
Right, exactly.
So I would sell my brewery if I had one, and I'd just make sure it was part of the contract. Like, look, you can buy us, but we get to say how we make our beer, and you never touch it.
Or
you
no know,
sale,
buddy, Liquid Lunch. How many years? He said 2 years for it. Totally goes to shit, probably.
That's not bad. Yeah, we need to talk to Josh again. He was a cool dude, and he knows a lot of shit about beer.
Exactly. I remember him saying that. I found that kind of interesting because all the like really high-end, quality craft beer pub snobs, they fire-selled all their Carbach beer.
Oh, man.
Even though it was still...
Yeah, it's like, it's not there yet. I mean, it's
right.
still a good brewery. I love Carbach, man.
They make good beer.
I hope they don't change too much too soon.
Yeah, me too. I remember when Coors bought Killian's Red.
Mm.
Killian's Red used to be so good, and then Coors fucked it up. It just made it so watery and tasteless. And I don't get. I think they ended up selling it off, or someone else bought it, and it's kind of gone back to the original thing. But I don't know for sure. I'd have to do some research. But typically, like if a Coors, a Miller. Or Anheuser-Busch buys a craft brewery, say goodbye.
Right.
It's over.
Well, what can you do? Speaking of beers, I know we're going to go to a tune, but...
Dropping wolf bait.
No. But what I'm excited about is, we'll talk about it more tonight, is this thing we've always talked about, you know, beer and metal. And
yeah.
That's our whole shtick. But... the stuff's starting to intersect, dude, and I mean in a big way. Decibel just threw the first annual Metal and Beer Fest up in Pennsylvania, or in Philly. And
fucking excited, dude. I mean, I'm thinking this could grow into something like Progfest.
Sure.
Where it was this independent little thing people were doing, and before you know it, it grew into this giant annual thing that everybody looks forward to. And I'm hoping that's going to happen with this. I was just reading here that Motorhead's got another beer collaboration coming out. Amplified Ale Works is working with them to release the Born to Lose IPA. So that's a 6.5% IPA that's supposed to be pretty sweet, pretty citrusy.
And that's only available over in England, right?
I don't know. It says it's going to be sold directly from Amplified's two San Diego locations.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, with further purchase available during the available from the website, thebeerconnect.com. Maybe that's the place we need to start looking for brew.
Yeah.
Because you're fucking us on getting hold of good brew.
Why don't we kick off a song here, take a few more sips of our fine fucking ale.
Oh, yeah.
That we got. I picked this for you.
For me?
You're
hating me.
You like the chick vocals. There's this band that I'm pretty particular. I don't like a lot of them, but there's certain bands that I do dig. So, but this band I thought was pretty cool. I think I might have played them before, but I heard the song came on the iPod today on the shuffle thing. The band's called Light and Shade. The album's called The Essence of Everything. Here's a song we're going to play. It's called Meet Me in Summer, which has kind of an 80s vibe, but then it gets a little bit more modern and heavy and cool.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, I think you'll really dig it, man. So let's check out this band, Light and Shade. I'm pretty impressed with them. What do you think? You dug that, right?
I dig it.
For a goof.
Got the goods.
The goods. So, back to this thing. So, yeah, do you think this could be something that could trend on? Like you mentioned Prog Power. So you got a Prog Power US, you got a Prog Power Europe. What do you think? Are you thinking it's something going to be less something like that? Or do you think it'd be more specialty where it's in one place?
I think it would probably start off that way. I think what it takes is anything like this. It takes somebody with enough sort of capital to sort of get the ball rolling and say, this is what can be done. And based on the relationships they have with people, they might be able to get certain people show up that they wouldn't normally get to show up, you know, if you were just some nobody. You know, the people who were in Decibel have been writing for that magazine, you know, making that magazine for years. Mm-hmm. So they've met a lot of metal people. They know a lot of metal people. They probably said, hey, if we do this, you guys, can we have your... Will you guys show up? So, and so that kind of thing.
What? So it's infancy, first time. What kind of bands can you expect to see?
I think most of them, they look like a lot of doom metal and that kind of stuff. A lot
anybody
of,
heard of
post-hardcore. Immolation, I've heard of them. But, I mean, they're a little too heavy for me. I know that Pig Destroyer, those kind of bands. A lot of stuff where basically...
Really heavy
shit. Yeah, the kind of stuff where when you look at the logo, it looks like somebody... You know, sneezed onto a pane of glass or something.
Hey,
guys. Yo.
Yeah, what's up?
Johnny and the Jockstraps rooting on the side stage.
This guy.
What
to always
what were
be on
playing?
The side stage.
We were playing that heavy record we did. Check the back seat.
Idiot.
I don't even want to ask what could have been back seat.
This guy.
No, it means out the back of the jock.
We get it.
Okay, whatever.
It's like chocolate surprise or something like that.
Johnny and the jock.
This guy.
Who would book them?
That's the real question for anyone. I'm looking up real quick who all was there. Sleep. I know Sleep. That band's going to be there. They're stoner metal.
Yeah.
So it's
more kind of underground, heavier stuff. What brewers? Were there any big brewers? I think you had mentioned Atwater was there.
And Unibrow.
Unibrow, yeah. That's
from
big.
From Quebec. They're there. I think, like I said, the deal with these kinds of things is that you're going to start off small, but you're going to grow. And as wind gets out there, people get ideas like, hey, I heard these guys are there. We love beer. You know, we didn't know this was going on. You know, the word gets out that this shit's kind of happening. Somebody's finally putting it together. I could see people throwing their hats in the ring going, hey, sure. Dude, I got an idea for next year. We're down, and we got these guys that are our friends, and I know they'll show up. And before you know it, you get a bunch more breweries going in. You know, once it starts getting that critical mass, I think that's when they say, hey, if it's this big, maybe we can split it off and have sort of a... you know, a version of it over in the lower states in the South or maybe on the West Coast, that kind of thing. Because it's a lot of trouble. Part of the problem is, you know, you have a brewery that's maybe on the West Coast, a really good one, and they're like, dude, I don't know if we can, what are we going to fly them out there, get a truck and drive across the country just to take a few kegs up there to sell to a bunch of metalheads for a weekend? You know, it's like, I don't know if it's worth it.
But you know it'll sell. People go to concerts and drink a beer nonstop.
And imagine if you go to a concert and the beer that's there to drink is some of the best from some of the best craft breweries around the country.
It'd be freaking awesome.
Why wouldn't you be all about it? So I could see this potentially being a really big thing, and I'm excited about it. I'm thinking, you know, the fantasy of mine whenever I hear stuff like this is, dude, what would you do if you could organize one yourself? It's like they come to you and say, you clearly for the South, for Texas, we need to talk to Genghis and Ragman,
sure.
And we need to go to the experts and say, who do we want us to put on the bill on the brewery side and on the metal side? Who should we call? And I think that's a task we would be up to.
Oh, we could take that.
We could speculate that shit all day long.
We could. Are we going to?
I think we should. You motherfucker. So, I mean, do you see? I guess the thing is, it's easy to go hog wild and fantasize about things like, what if, you know, Black Sabbath shows up for one final show or some bullshit? And that's just, I don't even think, feasible. Yeah. So you got to just say, look, you got to keep in mind, you don't want to have bands that's like, well, here's this band over here on one end, on this stage is Enough's Enough, and on this stage is like Dimmu Borgir or something. You know what I mean? You want to kind of keep it together. So maybe one day would be sort of the sort of more European metal side.
Sure.
The other day would be maybe the heavier, you know, hardcore or extreme metal shit or whatever you want to do.
The only thing I can think of, I don't know if in Germany, if Bex or somebody sponsors, I mean, it's not really crap, brew.
Mm-hmm.
I know some of these festivals, they try to blend like a craft food element or food truck element, so that's like a craft food, right?
All right, it's another craft thing, craft beer,
and then
craft
there,
food.
You see some craft beer, but no breweries, so I think that would be really cool. A really cool combination. So, brewery-wise, let's just spitball. Are we going to limit it to Texas breweries?
No, not at all. I mean, it's just easier because in Texas, it's a lot easier for someone in Fort Worth to say, yeah, I can drive down to Houston for the weekend and throw our beer out there, as opposed to I got to fly all the way to California or something.
So, if I'm picking a brewery out of Houston, I'm picking Buffalo Bite.
For sure. I was thinking
that, because they could offer a variety.
And knowing
they can
them,
do some
dude.
Crazy shit.
Yeah, I was going to say, knowing them, they could really throw some nice stuff. I mean, they already have their Don't Fear the Reaper with the IPA. They already got some stuff that could kind of go metal anyway, or certainly metal inspired. Because I think that's the fun thing about some of these breweries. You give them enough time, say, give them a year in advance. Go, hey, the concert, they're having the Brew Fettle. They just had it, you know, in April, the last third week in April. They could say, hey, we're already getting ready for next year.
Right.
Again, around April, Easter time, whatever, spring. We'll have another one. So right now they could start brewing shit. So they could start planning right now. And that would be really cool, because then you could put anything together.
Yeah.
And I would love to see that. I know Jeff Stuffings over at Jester King. is a huge metalhead. That's a big part of this, is a lot of these people...
The metalheads?
They were closet metalheads. Not even necessarily closet, like they were hiding it, but they were metalheads, and they just happened to be into beer. So they started these breweries. And there are certainly some beers that already have a metal edge to them, like, of course, like we said, Jester King has the black metal, the thrash metal, the funk metal beers.
Mm-hmm.
So you can tell there's an influence there. They're already into that shit. But I bet you there's others like that that maybe have that feeling, you know, they're into metal, but it doesn't necessarily come out in their beer. They keep it separate.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a chance to just say, hey, here's a limited edition brew that we're going to make just for this show, and we're going to go all out with it, you know?
Yeah.
Some stuff seems, you know, it doesn't seem metal to have like a, oh, look, here's our little cheesy little, you know, session ale or something like that for a metal concert. You want to do like your dark stouts and shit like that.
But you know what? You know, that said, depending time of year, if it's summer, you want a good session ale. Just because it's low in ABV, you drink that shit all day long.
But something light, and I can see the argument for something like an IPA or something where it's like it's light, it's fresh, nice little kick, because you get like a double IPA in that bitch, like around 9% ABV.
There's a nice little brewery here outside of town, a place called Pearland called Baked Fish. And they have some nice, like a mango wit, or... God, what was that other one they had? It's like an orange peel type IPA type thing. So, yeah. So, these fruitier type combos with like IPAs and stuff, like summerish. Mm-hmm. I think it's summer because that's typically when you're going to see a festival. But, yeah, you might want some. Again, if it's a heavy based show, band wise, you may want to do
something
some
to kind
dark
of fit
black
the mood.
Metal stout or something like that, you know?
But you're right. I mean, you could think of, like, say, something like a traditional power metal sort of band. You don't necessarily think stouts, right? You might be thinking more like what's like a good ESB or something. Or really, you know, something that really fits an English sort of style or European style, I guess.
Yeah, the Hammerfall ESB.
There you go. That would be sweet. Yeah, for sure. That's what I mean. It's something like that. We can really...
The Man of War Pills?
Something like that. I mean, that's the thing. You can have a lot of fun putting that shit together and,
yeah,
and coming up with sort of pairings to go with it.
Dragon's Blood, Blood Orange IPA. I don't know.
Or Dragon Force. Maybe you have some sort of pairing with that. But that's the thing. The sky's the limit.
Mm-hmm.
We get some of the best, even just Texas breweries alone, we could have some great beers out there represented.
We could limit it to Texas. I don't know if we could limit it to Texas Axe, but we could limit it to Texas breweries.
Definitely. I would do that. Texas breweries, and then just go nuts on that, see who shows up, right?
Sure.
put the words out there. It would be nice to really get a nice difference of metal. I mean, this is, I guess, the trick or the challenge that comes with planning, I guess, a festival, isn't it? Because that's what happens at Ozfest or something. You
right.
go, we can't just pick anybody. We got to have something where it's sort of almost like a theme,
you're
or at least
draw, though,
or at least a spectrum, right? Where they just a couple of bands like this, a couple of bands like that, a couple of bands. So it's not just that and that on each end of the spectrum,
right?
Blowing people's minds. And I guess when you think of it that way. And then just add in the beer aspect of it for the background. And, you know, whenever we go to a Buffalo Bayou Brewing Company festival over there near downtown, they do the same thing in that they have their beers, but they'll have like some indie food trucks out there too to provide some chow. And they got some pretty good ones. So, I mean, there'd also be a sort of a foodie element to it as well. But I think the key is, there it is at the bottom. But the key is, about having these really killer bands and some killer brews matched together for a couple of days where you can just go nuts.
Yeah, I would try to think, you would try to want to know, you know, who could bring the biggest draw. So you'd have to pick some classic bands. I think you could have kind of an array of bands. You could have somebody really heavy, you could have...
Killswitch Engage could be there.
Oh.
We're a band that's like not necessarily top of the heap, like having, you know, Kiss or somebody or Judas Priest, because you're not going to get those guys. But somebody who's like, they're going to draw some people.
Alter Bridge? For the newer kids?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you get Maiden there, it'd be awesome, but that ain't
sure.
Cool. Exactly. Oh, dude, they could bring their 666 beer.
the trooper beer. You got to have your trooper beer. See, stuff like that is what I was thinking, you know? And, gosh, I don't even know. I mean, I guess you could also have, I mean, there's those metal beers.
Yeah.
You know, we know Megadeth has their
Mastodon has one.
Yep.
Wasn't one from the Ramones or something stupid like that?
I think so. Motorhead, like we just talked about, is having one.
Maiden.
Yeah.
Wow.
There's a lot of bands out there doing it, and I don't know that those bands would necessarily show up to the thing, but wouldn't it be awesome just to sell the beer? The brewery doesn't necessarily have to be there. Just maybe have the beer represented or something. I don't know.
Yeah, you would think that if it was a craft beer deal, then the breweries would have it, you know, a booth with, you know, several beers on tap that they'd be selling. I mean, that would make the most sense, right?
I guess I wonder, too, but this goes to festivals in general, I guess, you know, is how do you do this where, like, we were here all day long Saturday, and it's like, all right, everybody go home. See you tomorrow.
Yeah.
We'll do it again. And you're like, holy crap, really? It's like, I don't know if I got the stamina to come back, get wasted again, and stand all day jamming to bands.
If you think about it, that's what these festivals are.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of
it's like a, it's truly a marathon of just rocking.
So, and a lot of people stay at the hotel near the festival ground, so as soon as the show's over, they go pass out, and they get ready for the next day, you know? Or they party more. Who knows?
Just keep on
partying. I mean, if you're our age, you're probably not going to do a lot of that anymore. But
no.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, guys go out there and probably get thrashed or hammered and then just wake up and do it again the next day.
Yeah, because at my age now, basically, you know, around 4:30, I go down to the cafeteria, get the early bird special.
Sure.
Get my dinner. You know, go see a concert and turn in like 8:30.
There you go. There you go.
Get up 4 in the morning.
I'm trying to think. I mean, I think you would have to do... You'd have to get a headliner that's going to be a big draw.
Yeah.
And then you got to bring in some newer bands that are going to bring the younger crowd.
True.
To bring that draw. And then maybe some old school bands.
Mm-hmm.
So, I know when they had that open air thing in Houston last year.
Mm-hmm.
I think the headliner was Alice in Chains, but the Cult was there.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had Ministry, it was the older bands. Alter Bridge was new.
See, but there's an interesting mix. You've got an industrial metal band next to something like,
everything.
Like the Cult.
Sure.
Putting the Cult and Ministry together seems like a weird mix. But
I think what you'd have to do is find one of these festivals that's kind of touring and then say, okay, we're gonna mix our craft brew stuff in there.
Just route them through here 1 year and just serve your craft beer at it.
Unless you had the bread to say, okay, I'm booking all these bands and we'll see what happens.
That would be the tough one. I don't know if that could really work. I mean, but like I said, the point of this is we're just fantasizing. It's an exercise, a fantasy exercise here. But
You know, if we would have given this more thought, we could have come up with our festival lineup. You know, pick how many bands and our brewery. That's your homework, sir, for another show is we'll pick our breweries. We'll talk to each other about it. We'll get our headliners. We'll do our own little concert then.
You know, it reminded
fantasy
me.
Concert.
You know, you reminded me of back in high school. High school it was. I was a dork like anybody else. And my thing was, is I had my... I was always doodling, especially in class. And so, one year, my whole thing was I was doodling the ultimate water slide.
Uh-huh.
And I got little stick figures, and I just mapped out this giant... And the water slide had was like, it was deadly, right? Like, it had, like, lasers to cut you in half if you didn't, like, jump right over this part. It had, like, you know, saw blades and shit. Just all this jumping through flaming hoops and shit.
Mm-hmm.
And what was cool is it went on just, like, for miles. And then at the end, you slid down, and then you came out, and at the end of it was Van Halen in concert.
That's your reward?
You slid right into the concert, like, yeah! And it was great. And I think that's just how we should do this beer thing. You get there... You go through all the like touring, having all the beers and stuff, and at the end there's just a killer fucking stage with if you survive. So maybe we got like Leatherface or something chasing dudes down. Mix that with one of those haunted house things.
We'll just have to figure out if we're going to leave it to just Texas breweries, and then the genre, the music thing, we give ourselves, 12-hour day? So you could have probably 8 bands.
Mm-hmm. So this is like one of those Sims, like when you play Sim City or whatever, where it's like, can I put this together and make it work?
Yeah.
And I think realistically, logistically, I don't know how you pull that shit off. Because for me, the most boring part of these things is, and this is what makes it interminable, when you go to an all-day concert like that, the set changes, dude. They drive me nuts. You're like, I see a band for 40 minutes. It's over before I know it. It's hot as fuck. I need a drink. I got to take a piss. And it's like... Oh, we'll see in 30 minutes. You're like, ah, you kidding me, dude?
Hey, guys.
Yeah.
Who's going to judge who wins?
What?
Hold on. The cheese wants to talk to you.
What are we even talking?
We're just speculating on... Colin, what's up? What do you need?
Hey, look, you guys are talking about stuff. You haven't consulted me. I have a sizable fee, I mean interest in what's going on here, and I need to know, you know, before you start signing anything and then making plans, all right?
Dude, this is all speculation.
We're just fucking around. It's like a fantasy thing.
Yeah, that notwithstanding, I do have a standard fantasy contract that needs to be signed.
The fuck are you talking about? A contract for fantasizing? What is the matter with you?
Hey, look. It is what it is, all right? Look, you're the guys who signed on for all this shit. I'm just trying to make sure everything goes smoothly.
I didn't sign on for nothing.
I didn't either.
Yeah.
Hey, Colin, how'd that O'Reilly thing go for you?
It's funny you should mention that. Actually, I'm not at liberty to go into great detail, but I think everything's going to be all right. It's really a lot of circumstantial evidence, really.
Hey, I don't want to be a dick, but it seems like the last few cases you've had, you've lost fairly miserably.
Yeah. Why would you think you were being a dick saying that?
Look, be that as it may, I mean, I think he's just trying to make the point that you're a little on shaky ground these days with your legal expertise. We're not quite sure if you know what you're talking about. Let's just be honest.
Hey, keep trying me, buddy. We'll see who knows what, all right? Now, you guys get back to work. I got a lot of shit up here. I got a file and shred.
Fair enough.
This guy.
Hey, guys.
God. Yeah, right now, dude. We're trying to do a show here.
I just want to say that she's resisting on Caitlin getting her vagina.
Thank God for that.
I don't even want to know. I'm not going to question.
I know. I'm so...
A wise man said, don't question what you don't understand. And I don't want to understand that.
I know. I don't want to understand none of this.
Caitlin's a child.
Oh, my gosh. What are we coming to? All right. So, anyway.
Okay. Whoa. On that note.
Hey, maybe a song will save us out of this.
Yeah, let's do... what do you want to do?
You know what? Let's throw in a little bit of that... you know what I've been jamming to lately.
What's
is
that?
The I don't know if we played any of the recently, the Aristocrats. Have I talked about Guthrie Govan?
Huh?
He's like the new, you know, the shred guy. I don't know if we talked about him much, but he's not heavy.
Yeah.
But he's a shredding motherfucker.
Oh, nice.
He's one of those guys that can play anything and make it sound amazing. So he can do that little chicken picking country style shit, but he can also do, you know, jazzy chord stuff. He did a video once where because they heard about the fact that he apparently can play almost any style. So, like you say, play like Yngwie Malmsteen, and he can totally sound like Yngwie Malmsteen. He goes, now play like Paul Gilbert, and play like, now play like Michael Schenker, and he sounds like those guys because he just knows those techniques and all the licks. And like I said, he's super fucking fluid and fast. He's amazing.
Oh, nice.
Anyway, he's got this band called the Aristocrats. It's just like a little trio, him and this bass player and drummer, and they have an album that. That came out. Well, they've got a few albums, but I would pick the one that a lot of people talk about, and I've been jamming to that, and it's some pretty amazing shit. So anyway, the album I'm talking about is called Culture Clash, and
Culture Club,
Culture Clash.
Oh, yeah,
yeah. It came out a few years ago, 2013, and it's pretty amazing. Like I said, it gives you an idea of what kind of shit this guy is capable of doing, because it's got some licks, and he's just shredding all over the fucking place. So.
Nice, I can't wait to hear it, man.
Oh, yeah, this is called Dance of the Aristocrats. I mean, is that fucking amazing?
That was badass. Crazy. Yeah.
I mean, it's your classic little rock trio, but it's like this guy, he just, and he, like I said, he's not necessarily heavy. He does his tone. He's like Steve Vai, where Steve Vai is, it's a distorted tone, but it still sounds kind of clean when he plays. It doesn't sound all super distorted and gainy. And so he does like that, and he's just like,
nice.
Yeah, and it's just, he looks like a hippie.
Oh,
like, you look at him, you go, he looks like a homeless dude who's about to ask you for money. And you're just like, this guy is the new rock god, but he's got the goods, dude.
That's cool, Holmes. Well, what do you think, man? Are we going to do our homework and come back with this on a future show?
Yeah, maybe we should. Maybe we'll just, you know, just for the fun of it, kind of come up with sort of a festival that we organize ourselves. We pick the, it doesn't even necessarily have to be a craft beer thing. It can be just sort of incidental, but the idea of, what if we decided to make our own festival? What would be the theme or the sort of central point of it? Who would we invite? You know, how long would it go? Where would it be? That kind of shit. Just for the fun.
I'd be down with that.
All right, cool. And then we'll come back on a future show with that one. And you guys won't be able to do shit about it.
Yeah. Except turn us off. Or fast forward. Yeah, I do that with a lot of podcasts where they get the fucking commercials and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to hear this. Why am I hearing this? I don't want to hear this.
Look, this is the dude. You're just like, if you saw this dude come up to you, you'd be like, get the fuck out of here, you bum.
You know,
but he's like, but I'm the new guitar god. I was like, no, you're not.
We don't care.
Check him out. He looks like Jesus.
Looks like Marty Friedman's little
boy. He was that dude when we were at seeing Homeboy at that weird little studio place. We saw Kiko or Loreo.
He was there?
No. The guy who was married, he says, oh, we got some other dudes coming. Guthrie Govan's coming. I'm like, Guthrie Govan? No shit. And I wasn't even aware of all of his music yet. I just heard he was the new guy.
And we could have got him in. You knew who he was.
And you fucked us. So that's cool.
What?
Thanks. I needed that.
Well, I tell you what. You want to move on to a classic of the show?
Let's do that.
Mr. G. So you want my classic over here?
Oh, I want it.
Well, I tell you what. I've told you I was buying some classic records that I had on vinyl or cassette and wanted to get them on CD. So I want a good copy, right? So
nice.
I picked up not a very popular record.
He sets it up.
But there was some okay stuff on it. All right. King Cobra's Thrill of a Lifetime.
Oh, nice.
And I love the roller coaster on the front. It's very nice. Actually, this is the album that I think Hinserling and some of those guys are like, we should have never done it. Should have never done it.
What do we think?
Well, their first record was pretty heavy. And then the second record, the producers or record company were like, you need a single. You need polish. You need this.
You get the hell out of here.
Yeah, so they ended up, they do this record, and basically it was the demise of the band.
So we're going to take a chance.
Yeah.
Fucks them.
But, I mean, I liked it back in the day, all right, and listened to it now. I did the same thing with Icon. They had their second record. I think it's called Night of the Crime.
Nice.
And I listened to it, and I was like, wow, it's not as bad as I remember it being back in the day. Mm. I mean, you're disappointed because it's not as heavy, and there's more like, hey, we're trying to get a single on this thing. Same thing with this Thrill of a Lifetime. Not a bad record. Always was a... fan of Mark Free's vocal, now Marcy Free, and Mick Sweeta and Hinserling on guitars, Carmine Appice on drums, forget about it.
Nice.
Johnny Rod on the bass. So I'm going to pick a song that me and my boys used to crank up when we would go out partying. This was the 80s, so no ragging on the rag man.
This ought to be good the way
you're
song's like
all called
scared.
Party Animal.
All right.
Hey!
Thanks, Holmes.
All right, Holmes. I pulled that one out of my arse.
Hey, I got one that's even deeper. This little nugget, this little brown nugget, is Eniac Requiem. We were talking about him earlier, and you were laughing at me like a prick you were. But, no, these guys were really cool. These guys had a great sound that, I mean, there was that, this came out in 98, and back in those late 90s, dude, I was hungry for just different
for
kinds
love?
Of metal.
Were you hungry just, for love?
No, but different
Icon
kinds of
was.
Metal. Different kinds of metal.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, who's this? And I went on a huge shrapnel kick, just whatever they had. I'm like, what else do you guys got? And these guys were always on there. This was Scott Stein. And him and his brother Brent Stein always had these cool, Brett Stein rather, always had these cool bands. It's like every other time you turn around, it was a new band. I think they were Criminy and Eniac Requiem and Haji's Kitchen.
And the Penny Pinchers.
The Penny Pinchers, yeah. All these fucking bands. You're just like, gosh, you guys need to maybe stick with one band for a while. How about
the
that?
The Taylors.
The Catamarans. No, but anyway, I love these guys. And they only had one album, Space Eternal Void, if I'm not mistaken. And I just always dug it. It was real good driving music. You just could drive around and play it on a late night with the windows down.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
I like
just kind of jam to them. Yeah,
I love Haji's Kitchen.
They had a good sound. Yeah. This one, we'll play this one, Endless Cosmos. This is a great tune.
Let's do it.
Gonna learn.
I tell you what, I'm digging this. Except the more I watch it,
I know, dude. I'm digging Lee Snyder, D. Snyder's brother on lead vocals. See, every now and then you're like, that totally looks like D. Snyder if he like stopped working out.
No, his name's Lee Snyder Johnson. He kept his maiden name, right?
His maiden name.
Because he looks like Brian Johnson,
or it's his half brother.
Yeah, no shit.
All right.
It's if Dee Snider and Brian Johnson had a kid together.
I understand why you're acting like this. Leave him alone. He's a good man.
Lee Snider Johnson.
You're all just loving it. Just cracking yourself up.
Oh, I'm so funny. To me.
I mean, I think so.
All right. Picks of the week. Picks of the week.
You know, my pick of the week, I'll say this. It came from none other than Mike Portnoy.
Oh,
I was
wow.
reading on the...
did he tweet you?
Yeah, and say, hey, dude,
oh,
guess
no,
what?
Not tweet. Did he text you?
Yeah. Skywriting. Just, hey, dude, check it out. No. He was tweeting out, talking about, you know, stuff that he likes, you know, bands. He's always, but I love this band, or dude, I'd love to... No, he didn't text me, motherfucker. Can I move on with this?
Aren't you the rock guy that has everybody on speed dial?
No.
So, you... Portnoy had a thing. He tweeted.
He was raving about this band that I'd never heard of, but, you know, what else is new?
Sure.
They've only been around. Their first studio album was in 2010, so that's not been around too long.
Yeah.
But they're, I think, an English progressive metal band from London. They're called Haken, or Haken.
Bless you.
And they're really fucking good, dude.
Oh, nice.
He was like, they're the latest super, you know, progressive metal group. They're the shit.
And I'm like, all right, fucking whatever. If you're going to endorse them that good, I might as well check them out. And I did. And I picked up their album, Affinity. And that's a good fucking album. There's some killer tunes on here. Let's maybe play something off of that. Let's go with 1985. Tell you,
it was good.
Look at me when I talk to you. No,
it was good. Unfortunately, turned me onto that one band. I turned you onto the band, then you turned me onto the band. And they had like the Volume One, Volume Two records. What the fuck were they called? I don't remember. It was a new band that he was like going crazy about.
Hmm.
It's like Music for Listening, Volume One, Music for Listening, Volume Two.
Oh, yeah, I know who you mean now. They had a funky name, like Fold or Fall or something, or
I don't know. I bought them based.
They were good though, weren't they?
Based on that one video, but then when I got the records and I was like, okay.
You didn't dig?
I didn't like it as well as I did the one night. Maybe it's a beer talking. I don't know. That's happened more than once.
These things happen.
It has happened, Holmes. So anyway, my pick of the week. I got a newer band. It's appropriate. I just hope this doesn't happen. Dead by April is the name of the band, and they got a brand new record called Worlds Collide. They're kind of like a newer metal type band, kind of mix a lot of stuff in there.
Uh-huh.
But I was digging them, man. Really, this record's pretty cool, and I was really digging on the song Playing with Fire.
Fire! Fire!
So why don't you take a listen to this and see what you think. You think. So anyway, that's it. There it is. We want to give you two big holes up.
What's up? This is Ryan.
And Levi from Miss May I.
And you're listening to the Genghis and Ragman Show.
Horns up!
Right, guys, you're live, and I mean really live, at the White Oak Music Hall here in Houston, Texas. And we're with Miss May I, with Levi and Ryan, Genghis and Ragman Live. Guys, welcome to Houston.
Hey, man, it's the first day of tour. We're excited, and it's going to be awesome.
Why Houston?
I think we have two Texas bands on the tour, and then one from the Upper East Coast and one from Ohio. So I think we start here, and then so we kind of drove here, and then we end in Ohio, and they all have to drive home from Ohio when it's over.
Yeah.
So nice midway.
Nice
midway point to start.
So are you guys still reside in Ohio, or you hadn't gone to L.A. or New York yet?
I'm in L.A.
Oh, okay.
Everyone else
the
is...
The band is based in Ohio still, though.
Yeah, based in Ohio.
Nice.
And amazing, or at least amazing to me, is you guys started off, I mean, you had your first record signing while you were still in high school, right?
Yeah.
I guess by then, obviously, you had already written songs, you'd been playing probably local places, so it wasn't maybe a huge mind-blow thing, but the idea for most people of being in a band in high school is a professional band.
That's it's regular to us, but I mean, to everybody else.
It's so weird. I always think like everything's not going to really like sink in until it's all said and done, because it's just always been, because it's the same five guys jamming the same songs.
Right, right.
To us, it's just more people watching, but all these things are happening around us, but we don't really think about it.
Sweet. And you guys have always written together from the beginning, or is there principal songwriters? Or how's that?
Yeah, it's still a group effort. We've got principal songwriters now that will get the demos started, but when we get to the studio, it's still everybody throwing in together.
It's pretty cool. BJ and Justin usually start the songs, the guitar players, but it's been the same thing ever since.
Once we get to the studio, everybody's got their hand on it, which is cool.
I was kind of curious about that. I didn't know if BJ and Justin did. Yeah, came up the riffs and worked it out.
Yeah, they usually kick the songs off. I'd say they get them about 65% of the way there instrumentally before they even show anybody.
Yeah, and it's always the riffs.
Yeah, and then we take them into the studio with the producer and we rewrite as a group. And then this time we had two producers. So once the songs were written instrumentally, we would show them to our vocal producer and to Levi, who was in L.A. at the time, and then we would rework them again if we felt like the songs weren't going to lend themselves to the ability to put good vocals over them. Yeah. We took a lot more time than normal. We've never done that before. We've never had the time to do that, but this time we did. So,
well, I think it's awesome. It's almost like you took 10 or 12 instrumentals with the studio.
We took 30.
And DJ 30.
Yeah.
So what happened to the other 20? Were they finished, complete?
No, a lot of those would be skeletons.
They were just like the base of it, but they weren't cutting it. Only the ones that made it.
Yeah.
I don't even think the ones that made it went from 30 to 8, and then we actually
A few of them are original, yeah. A few of them are original from the studio time, so they were written while we were in the studio. They weren't even demoed beforehand, so we dropped even more than 20 demos, I would say.
Never see the light of day. They're gone.
Oh, really? I hear a lot of bands, older bands, you know, we're older guys, that every once in a while they'll go tap into just... go back and put the headphones on. Well, that was kind of a cool idea, even though we couldn't get it work the first time.
Yeah.
Can we develop this into something else? Do y'all kind of store some of that?
No, I don't think so. I
have all the demos on my iTunes saved.
They're fun to listen, but I think
there's a reason they didn't make it.
Yeah, right. If they didn't make it the first time, I don't really think they're going to get better while they sit there. So
yeah, we can always do better. If we don't nod your head the first time around, it's like, nope, you got to keep working on it. So yeah.
Well, how would you guys say that Shadow Inside differs from Deathless?
Deathless was a really dark, dark time for us, and it was really aggressive, and that whole record it was made to be a heavy, heavy record and just come out swinging. And
it was made quickly.
And it was made quickly, yeah. But the idea of going into that record was just to sort of have a heavy, heavy record. Like, that was that. Well, that's why I went back to Joey Sturgis for that one. And this one, we wanted to really just, not just do a Miss May record, but sort of take it, do the things we could do to take it to the next level. Like, what have we not done to really go to the next level? And I feel like we've always deleted some cool, sort of really ambitious, crazy ideas because we're like, it's not safe enough or we're going too far. And this time, it was sort of a goal to feel uncomfortable, to sort of push yourself over the edge. And so all those things we used to delete and feel safe back in the day, we were like, we don't feel uncomfortable enough. Let's keep making it a little bit more weirder. And then we're like, okay, does everyone feel a little weird? We're like, yeah, we're like, okay, the song's good. And then, like, so we just pushed ourselves to the limit on this record, which we've never done that on any record before.
Especially on the vocal side.
The vocal side was
very uncomfortable because we had a great producer who was excited to make us do things on the record that we'd never done before, where we've always done them. They just never make it to the record because we're always self-conscious about it, and we'll delete them. And Drew would be like, nah, that's really good. We're just going to go ahead and keep that. And we're like, I don't know, man. And then you come back the next day after sitting on it for 24 hours, and you're like, you're right. That's why you're the producer, and we're not.
Yeah.
So at this point, do you think all those years being together, same lineup, going on like 10 years now, has that made it easier to write songs with each other, or in some ways maybe harder?
Yeah.
It's easy.
It's natural. It feels like we can...
Get along for how long we've been together. I mean, we get along really well for how long we've been together. We don't have to sugarcoat things when we want to make changes to songs. We know each other well enough that we know how to speak to each other and say things in a way where you're not offending each other. When you're young and in, you know, your first couple of years of being in a band, you're basically writing songs is telling each other that your riffs suck. Like, that's kind of what it is in a nutshell, because there's a lot more songs that get cut than songs that make it. So you're kind of just telling your friends that you think that riff that they're playing isn't good enough. So you got to figure out, it's something you kind of learn after you've been together a while, is how to be cohesive and work together and be able to say that sort of thing without just shitting all over somebody's idea, you know, and making them feel like an idiot. And I think the decade of having to tell each other when we don't like each other's ideas has made us pretty good at that.
Yeah, it's all constructive now. It's cool.
That's what's going to keep you guys together. Yeah, your producer story struck me as like an old story I heard about Def Leppard back in the day when they were doing Pyromania. Mutt Lange was pushing. Joe Elliott was like almost in tears every day. Because he was singing so hard.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys felt that, the blood and tears of that, but it sounds like he really pushed you guys to, you know, try to do different things.
A lot of subject matter. Subject matter is where ours would come in. We would start writing about a topic, and then we'd finish the song, and then we'd come back a couple hours later like, I don't want to talk to the world about that.
Yeah, I don't want everyone to hear that about
me. Let's just delete that. And he's like, I don't know, man. It's pretty great. You know, people are going to connect with this. And you're like, I don't know about that. Maybe we should just... And then before you know it, you're like, it's a great song. It's a great song. I like it.
Yeah. And then on the performance side, it would be like, hey, you should try this. And it would be something really weird. And I'd look at him like, there's no way I'm going to do that. He's like, just try it once. And we'd all be laughing. Like, you try it and you're like, ah, that's pretty cool. And then like you're running with it. And then you end up, by the end of the day, you did something new with your vocals that you've never done in your whole life. So,
yeah, we dropped the pitches on the record overall. I was like 60% of the last record at the top of my range a lot of the time, just really aggressive, crazy, heavy metal style vocal out of my side too, not nearly as much singing on the last record, just a lot of crazy, aggressive, double screaming kind of thing from us. And then when we got in there for this one, it was like lower tune melodies that are more natural for my voice and cool, weird, low-pitched screams that fit the stuff, and we never would have done any of it had we not gone to somebody that was like, you guys sound pretty great when you do this, too. I know you've been weird about trying it for years and years, but now that we've got it on tape, now we just recorded it, and you can listen back, and you can hear that it actually is awesome. If you don't record it and put yourself through the suffering of listening to your weirdness of when you're like figuring things out, you'll never find those cool ideas.
Do you get nervous going on tour with this record, performing new songs, knowing your hesitation in the studio and the way you push yourself is like, oh shit, now can I pull it off live?
I think I was like that at first, because I know, especially we're playing Swallow Your Teeth and that song, like how, like, am I going to be able to do like that kind of those kind of weird vocals like sort of live? And I was thinking about it, stressing about it, and then we finally get to like jam it and rehearse it, and I've jammed the record so many times because we've had the record since December.
Yeah,
and I've like listened to it every day in the gym, and I just love it. And going to rehearse and knocking those songs out, it's like from listening to it so much, I'm sort of stoked. It's sort of like doing like karaoke because I like the record so much, and I'm like, oh, this is easy. So I'm sort of on the other side of it now because I've like, he broke those barriers down, and now I'm sort of like, I can flaunt it and be like, okay, I'm like, it's a new sort of side of me, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's cool because it was sort of just like a big shell he sort of broke down around us, and now it feels like a weight's been lifted off our shoulder. It's so nice now to do this, yeah.
Is there maybe a song or a couple of songs that you feel like, this surprised me. This wasn't a song I ever would have done before, but and it's great.
We haven't released those as singles, but there's three of them on the record that are pretty out there.
Yeah,
they're cool. Yeah, they're out there in a cool way. We did one record a few years ago, and we had some out there songs, but after we got the record finished, we just felt like we missed it a little bit. We weren't sure. We didn't understand what we missed or why the songs weren't how we wanted them, but we had taken a little bit of a step in that direction, and then it kind of scared us away from it, and then we did the really angry throwback kind of sound like on Deathless, and then when we came in for this one, we just kind of let the weird ones fly when they came in. Yeah, so there's three of them on there.
Never Let Me Stay.
That's Crawl. A strange one.
Yeah.
And Crawl.
Put that on my list.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Death Knows My Name.
Yeah. And they're cool songs. They're still very heavy metal songs. They just are a different style of heavy metal than we would be.
Different approach.
Be
yeah.
known for, yeah. And a lot more lyric writing on my end, so they're a little bit darker than some of the other songs. And they were weird, yeah. We were really curious if it was going to work when we were writing them. Like, we would bring them back and listen to them, and we were like, I don't know. This is a pretty different song. But once you put it in the full list with all the other songs, it makes for such a cool record. It's nice to have those changes in pace on the record.
Yeah. Well, that's what I like about this record, the versatility. I mean, from song to song, it's something different. You're throwing some curveballs out
there.
I'm assuming that's kind of what you guys were shooting for.
Yeah.
And I love it as a fan. I think, and it's early, it may be my favorite record you guys have done so far.
We've heard that from a lot of people. Yeah. I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
We worked really hard on it, and that was a big thing for us because we've been around long enough now that we've seen the transition from physical copy sales being the primary thing when Apologies Are for the Week came out in 2009. To now, there's a big focus on digital streaming, and with the digital streaming, you don't have as many people focused on a whole record. I mean, you might get their attention for 3 to 4 songs, and we just felt like there's a few artists who've released records in the last couple of years. Bring Me the Horizon's done it like 3 times in a row, where the record is just so good from front to back that every song on their record is popular, because you just have to have a record that is so good from front to back and so diverse. And that was a big goal of ours going in. We didn't want to do what we did on Deathless and just do 10 of the heaviest possible aggressive songs, because we just don't think that that's going to... Deathless did well, and we had a great time on it, but we could tell that if we would have stretched ourselves a little bit further and not cut out a lot of those ideas that were intimidating to us, we might have had a little bit more success. So this time when they came around, the producers were open to forcing us to be like, just think about it for a day. Before you delete it, think about it for a day and just see if you warm up to it.
Well, I want to ask you about a couple songs on the record. The first one, the Stand on Track, is the lead track, Shadow Inside. What a great song. It's very anthemic. I can hear people going, whoa, in the audience. I hope you get those kind of chants tonight, going on the tour.
Yeah.
What a great song. How did that song kind of come together for you guys?
Contaminated, Lord, I don't need it.
first one, right?
That was the first song. It's funny because it's the first song on the record because it's the first song we recorded in the studio. We just jumped into it, and that we didn't have the title of the record before the album started, so we didn't know Shadows Inside was going to be like the title track and the whole theme of the record when we were going into it. But we were going through this awesome thing as a band where we were getting rid of this huge weight of just stuff behind the scenes, and just we cleaned up a lot of things that needed to be cleaned up, and with that we just felt so great. And that whole song's about sort of outshining all those shadows and sort of being in a better place and all that, and it was just
which we tried to start doing on Deathless, and we went the anger route.
Yeah.
Whereas this time we started uplifting on this one instead of with like I hate everything.
Yeah,
like the last one, you can see the positive mindset coming out of the band again in with the title track and the coming out right off the bat, which is cool because it really was the first song we recorded, and that just kind of shows you we dove into the recording with a really nice positive attitude. I hadn't even met Drew yet. Levi knew him already because they lived close to each other, but I flew in and we tracked Shadows Inside 2 days after I met him, and it ended up being the title track.
Yeah.
And
we're playing it back and we're like, holy shit, this is the first song? Like, damn, the rest of the record's going to be great.
Yeah. You almost expect a mulligan on the first one.
Yeah.
Like, you do it together,
yeah,
and then you're like, all right, so we'll just leave that one alone for a while and we'll come back to it since it was kind of our warm-up, but it ended up being
it's a banger.
A lead single, yeah.
My Destruction. That one's a little different for you guys. And to me, as just an 80s metal guy, it almost had kind of an 80s metal vibe to it, kind of mid-tempo.
Instrumentally, I think we were thinking Parkway Drive, In Flames, anthemic, big festival
sing-along
atmosphere, sing-alongs. Definitely inspired by a lot of the really cool arena and stadium metal acts that we've had the opportunity to play with the last few years, doing like the European festivals and big American festivals.
That's
and stuff.
Be surreal.
That was a difficult song for us, actually, to write lyrically.
I rewrote so many.
Yeah,
times.
We rewrote that one a lot of times. We wanted it because we didn't want it to end up sounding like any of our touring counterparts either. We wanted that tempo and we wanted that style song, but we didn't want it to turn out to be too much like the bands that were inspiring that sort of tune from us. And we worked really, really, really hard on that one, and we scrapped it a couple of times.
Yeah, it got...
I think you re-recorded that song two or three times
like
and threw it away.
At the very end, like the last week, I'm like, we got to redo it. I just wasn't happy with it until... Because it was just so outside the box and so different for us to have a song like that, that even coming into it, I'm like, I don't even know where to... Like, I love the song, but I don't even know where to start to put vocals. Like,
I think we wrote it as a soft singing song to begin with.
Initially,
we deleted my part first, and we were like, what if we just flip-flop it? What if the singing is aggressive, and then we take, and then it was hard. We tried everything. We flip-flopped a bunch on that one. That's probably a good weaker
on that
one. That song took forever, on and off.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Some of them are like this, and some of them you just keep messing up, and you're like, I don't know.
Yeah, we're always interested to find out what track gave you the biggest headache.
That one for sure.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you, because you guys both sing, of course. How do you divvy up the vocals?
song to song. I enjoy singing lyrics that he writes, and sometimes I write lyrics that he enjoys. So we've never had a problem with collaborating on the lyric part. And then he's great at coming up with melody spots too. A lot of the time, we kind of see the melody in the same spot.
Yeah.
And then from there, it's just kind of about writing it. But a lot of the time, I think he's probably 75% of it. And what we like to do is the chorus is usually our. It changed a lot on this record because we did such a different structure. But a lot of the old stuff, like Monument, it would be like Levi would write all his stuff, and he'd give me a synopsis, like a theme of the song and what he's trying to say, and then we would write this big chorus, this anthem chorus mm-hmm. together. And this time it was...
It's all over the place.
Yeah, yeah.
We just vibed out on this song. It'd be like... We just sort of felt... This song, or this record, wasn't really sort of strategically built like a lot of our other ones. This one was really just naturally, like, vibed out on. And I think that really made a big difference when we were going into these songs. We're like, this is really cool. Like, I'm feeling... I sort of hear Ryan here, and we're all looking at each other. Like, that'd be different. We're like, I hear that, though. Let's try it. Because, like, in our... Back in the day, it'd be so strategic, like, this has to be like this, it has to be like this, this is what people like. And this time we sort of believed in ourselves a lot more than we used to, and just opened up. We're like, let's just, awesome. We can just do it. Yeah. Like, yeah, we'll just do what we want, and, like, it will be, like, it will make the song awesome.
Last track to bring up to you guys, Under Fire.
Oh, yeah.
That is a powerful, melodic, I love that. That's another early favorite. Almost as much of Shadow as Inside, but kind of between the two. I hope you're playing both live tonight. I don't know if you want to give that up.
We're playing a few new ones.
Yeah, we have a healthy amount of the new record in there, that's
excellent.
For sure.
Excellent. Yeah.
I remember being a ripping one instrumentally, that in the studio, the guitar solo being a huge standout piece of the instrumental section of the record recording. We had it demoed and it was already pretty good, and then BJ went in with Drew, and I remember, or with Nick, and did the solo, and that I remember when we delivered that, that became a favorite song among the band. Lyrically, that was cool too. We did that one second. We recorded that one second, and we second-guessed ourselves a lot on that one.
Yep.
We came up with, we have these goofy studio names for different style vocals that we do.
Like, so that's the one with a lot of cooking
on. So that we can remember them. Yeah, and we've got this one layer that we figured out works really well. Not as often for me with the singing, but with Levi, a lot of the screaming, we made this particular tone called Cookie Monster.
Yeah.
And that's one of those moments in the studio that we, like we were saying, Drew's like, this is the noise I need you to make. Like, I promise you, if you can do this noise with your voice into the microphone and we can blend it in with this other piece that Ryan's doing, it's gonna be awesome. And Levi's like, no.
Yeah, and he described it. I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, just like, sort of like, say what you're saying, but like, as Cookie Monster would say. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And then I just did it, and we're all like, oh, I can understand what you're saying. And then we just started doing this, like, Cookie Monster layer on the record.
Yeah, and then as he, like, dialed in that particular skill, and then it's amplified through the microphone and stuff, a couple days later, it just became a term that we used when we would get to a song. Like, if we get to a song and that piece needed in there, he's like, we need a layer of a certain something or other here. And we're like, are you thinking Cookie Monster? Or what? And so it just becomes like a running, a name for the skill, I guess, that we would use. Yeah.
I wanted to go back, if I could, just in general, tour life and stuff, you guys, which y'all do maybe to blow off steam. I know that about a little over a year ago, y'all had a lot of trouble, right? You had a couple of accidents.
We had a really bad year,
One of the guys' house got broken into, stole a bunch
of things. Oh, no, that was on the tour.
Yeah,
on the tour.
Basically, Baltimore was first.
That was on the bus fall.
Okay, yeah, so we wrecked an ice storm in Wisconsin, totaled a trailer, bought a trailer, missed two shows, but made it to Canada. Made it through Canada. Baltimore was the first or second show after Canada. I think it was for Levi, Jared, and BJ, right?
Yep.
You three?
Got all our stuff taken.
Yeah. What did you get? What was stolen?
My Xbox.
Yeah.
My Xbox had like a little TV case. And Jared's BJ's laptop recording stuff.
Yeah, Jared's whole duffel bag with his passport and all this shit in it. That all happened the day we got back into America. And then later towards the end of that tour, we got in a second accident and did like almost 10 grand in damage to the van. Somebody hit us after we left South by So What, in Dallas.
Ooh, pissed, man. That was
an exhausting tour. I mean, we were done. I mean, we actually skipped the very last show of the tour because the van was wrecked and like we were exhausted. We were about,
we're going home. Yeah. We were pissed.
Yeah. And then we only did one more tour, man. We did one more tour the entire year after that. We did a Memphis Mayfire, We Came as Romans support run right after that in the U.S. Went to Slam Dunk Fest for like, I don't know, maybe, I don't even think it was 2 weeks. And over in the U.K. And we actually took, after that, it was 9 months before we played a show again. 3 days, or 5 days ago was our first American show in 1 year.
Wow. Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. Man. It was the longest break we've ever taken.
Well, we did the record. So that's great. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. We had such
like
a bad
time.
Yeah, we had such a rough start to last year that we were like, we're not touring anymore. We're just going to fix the damn van and we're going to go write this great record and we'll come back and try again next year when our luck is better. See how we
Let me ask you about the videos. The two new videos, there's the theme of the mask, the lion. Give us the scoop.
Yeah. So we wanted to bring the lion back this record, and we always bring it back in different ways. It's like the first time how it was drawn. Then we did like a stone drawing, tattoo. It's always 2D and coming back. And this time we were like, what if we could make something that people could touch and they could have? And so we created this mask, went to a sculptor and everything, and we were like, what if a fan could take it home, touch it, wear it, be a part of the lion? And we came with this mask, and it worked out great because when we were coming up with that, we were coming up with Shadows Inside being the title because the record was pretty much done when we came with the idea. And we knew the record was about past, and we're like, well, what if the mask like represented like your life and you take it through with you and all this? And we had this huge, elaborate thing that we can make the lion physical. And when we did the first video, instead of just making it just about the song or whatever, just a normal video, we're like, this is the debut of us being gone for 9 months. We're gonna debut like the mask on the cover. Like, we need to have the physical mask in the video. So we made real ones, and yeah, we got to write the story around the mask, and we're gonna hopefully keep it around.
Well, I dig it. It's got a little bit of a horror vibe to it.
Yeah.
I noticed this one time there, everybody's in mask. Looks like a cult or something. I'm like, cool, man. I love horror movies. So I mean, I love that theme. If at some point, say, the record really takes off and y'all could do a little bit more with it, you know, long-form video with the horror stuff. There's a band out of, God, I think they're out of Sweden that did something like that. Their whole thing was like vampires and stuff like that.
Oh, okay.
And I think it was Crystal Ball.
Oh.
And they had this cool theme going on. I'm like, dude, watching the video is like watching a movie.
Yeah.
And I love the way you guys are shooting the video. It's real film and stuff. It was very cool. Very nice touch. As well as your tour diary. I thought that was really cool. Yeah. I like when bands do that. Gives the fans a little bit more insight.
Yeah, we never got to do that. Like a documentary in the studio. It was cool to have someone sort of telling the story of what we're doing.
Was it weird having all the cameras in the studio?
No, we did it is our new... our thing was... We never let people come to the studio. We never, ever let them come at all. We brought our buddy Rick one time, and we didn't even get a great documentary because every time we'd get his camera out, we would shoot him. Rick, put the camera away. Says at the time. So then this time when we linked up, we wanted somebody who'd been in the studio before and knew how to move around the studio and would understand when to be there, when not to be there, and that we could trust to not catch us arguing with each other over
stupid
stuff as you work your way through songs. That's the main thing. You don't want them like getting video you guys of you like bickering over two notes of a damn guitar rip.
Yeah.
He was really cool, man. His name was Bobby Bates, and he stayed at the same hotels as us. And we flew him from, I think he was New York City.
Yeah.
Flew him to Michigan. He was there with us through the instrumental section. And then we also flew him out to L.A. And we all basically it was just me in L.A. I stayed at his house, and Bobby stayed as well. And he was easy to have following us around. Yeah. It was pretty cool. He would always make sure he asked us beforehand and tell us like what he wanted to do, and I think we were just so easygoing about it that it made his job easy. So yeah. He just kind of did all of it on his own. We didn't really have to.
He's a pro.
Yeah, he's a pro. We didn't have to stress about it too much. It was really nice. It was really cool. He just sent us the episodes one day, and we're like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
You were there the whole time. I forgot. These look great.
In lots of great video at the towards the end, yeah. You got this little mouse like dangling into your mouth. Yeah, How far did it get?
It went like halfway in there. I had to do it a few times. Yeah, it was. In email, it's so much cooler than when it's really happening and you're holding it. Like on email, I'm like, yeah, I'll totally do that. That'll be awesome. And I'm holding it. I'm like, man, this sucks. I'm so bummed that I said I was going to do this. But it was cool. It wasn't as gross and like. I thought he would, like, the mouse would be, like, very offensive and, like, or not.
Afraid of you and
poop. Yeah, I thought or, like, attack and scratch and all that. I'm like, man, he's gonna like, go in defense mode. And he was, like, freaking out. But it's literally so small and light that I couldn't barely feel it in my mouth. It was weird.
Last quick question. I know you guys want to get ready for the show and everything, but I thought this was really cool in your career. I didn't realize that the song was in the film soundtrack. But you had Forgive and Forget in Saw 6.
Yeah.
How did that work out?
That just sort of happened. It was crazy. We got I think we found out on an email.
Via email, yeah.
They're just like, hey, I know that whole soundtrack was, it was like a lot of metalcore bands and bands that were hot at the time, like what was happening at the time. And it's because I remember it was like Memphis and there's a bunch of friends that are on there as well. And whoever was doing the soundtrack was a fan of the music, and it was really cool because how the email came, it was like these songs sort of represent the story of the movie and all that, and it goes along with it. And yeah, we got the email and we're like, we thought it was fake. I'm like, there's no way, because that was our first record. We're like, there's no way our first record we're like getting the movie. But yeah
we ended up with two syndicated
we have a video game song too.
Yeah, we got a video game song on that record too, which is a crazy thing to happen. Like, that's a whirlwind time for us, being the first record. So we're like going from playing these like 200 person shows at home in Ohio to touring around the United States to all of a sudden there's a record out. Now all of a sudden one of the songs is in a movie and another one's in a video game. And
it was crazy.
Yeah, it was that whole record cycle, there was a lot of really neat stuff going on.
Are you a big video game guys?
Yeah, I am.
You said your Xbox was sold, so I figured. So you had to be geeked that you got one of your songs in a video game.
It's so weird that I would be so crushed about a video game system. I'm still crushed about it. I love that. Yeah, I was so bummed. But yeah, a few of us, the guys are big gamers, so we were pretty bummed.
Well, what are you going to do on the road when you're just driving the long distance?
Yeah.
Do y'all go by bus and everything, or?
It depends on what tour. Yeah. This tour we're doing a van.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's another weird thing about us is we've been touring for almost a decade now, and we still like our van.
The setup we have now is awesome. Like,
yeah, we really we have this like hotel system, and we're like perfect roommates for each other. Like, we have 8 people with us, and the rooms are divided into 2 4 people groups, and you know exactly who rooms with who every night.
Yeah,
you awesome. Know who you can sleep in the same bed with because you sleep the right. Like, it's just such a well-oiled machine in the van for us that we love it. I mean, it took us 2 days of this tour. By the third day of this tour, everybody was like, all right, so every single day is going to be just like this, isn't it? Like, yep.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
That's sweet, man. It looks like you guys are like a band of brothers. I hope you have great success. you just keep getting better album to album to album. So
I appreciate it.
We wish the best for you. Before we let you go, is there anything you guys would like to tell the fans out there?
Yeah, we're excited to bring this show that we're bringing around the U.S. To everybody, because we're not just performing, we're really bringing something next level for the band, and hope everyone can make it out. Tickets and everything for the new records on MissMayIMusic.com.
Yep, you find pre-orders there, find the new music videos.
Social media, all that.
New record is out in 7 days from right this second, from June 2nd,
yeah.
Finally. Is that the third time we've released a record in June? So.
Yeah.
There
we
go.
Third time's a charm.
Yeah. There you go. Well, we want to thank you guys for coming on the Genghis the Ragman show here on therighttorock.com. We want to tell all the fans to get Miss May Eye's brand new record, Shadow Inside, coming out June 2nd on Sharptone Records.
We hope you check out our website at therighttorock.com, where you can find music and video reviews, along with occasional bits of other metal and beer-related info. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Our show's posted on a regular schedule, but we average a couple a month, so feel free to leave a review and tell your friends so we can spread the word. But above all, please check out the artists we play on the show, and support good music wherever you find it by buying from your favorite merchants. And that definitely includes the amazing Tracy G. We love you, brother, who writes all of our original theme music. You can find him online at TracyG.com, so check him out. Well, that's it, and there it is. I'm your announcer, Joey Clams, reminding you to drink good beer, support good music, and keep those horns up.